The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD, and this is The Bill Myers Show.
Captain William E. Simpson, of course we know Wild Horse Fire Brigade, but he's been keeping an eye on what's been happening with the Klamath Dam removal. And it's been some breaking news. Some breaking news happened yesterday about some memos going out there and potential danger involving the Iron Gate Dam removal. So you have this information up, Captain Bill, on Siskiyou.news, this story which is up there. And could you hit the high points of what we're actually looking at? Because we're talking about a lot of memos and engineering firms quitting and DPP, which doesn't get defined. I don't even know what a DPP is. Help us understand what this really means in the dam removal world. Could you help us out?
Good morning, Bill. Thank you. So there was an engineer who, his name is Stephen Koshy, who he's now passed away. But back in 2012, he wrote letters to the BOR, to the DOI, Dr. Paul Howard.
Okay. Now remember, don't use shortcuts there, because nobody knows what DOI is. You do.
But, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, too close to the problem. That's part of the problem.
Uh-huh.
The Department of Interior, and which is abbreviated DOI. everybody got this memo, and then the chief scientific officer for the Department of Interior at that time, Paul Hauser, also cited this study by Stephen Koshy, who's a earthen dam engineer. That's what he does. This guy was a specialist in these clay core dams. Mm-hmm. And a clay core dam is a way to build a dam where you use clay, which it's like plastic in a way. You pack it down and it stops the penetration of water. That's how you seal a pond, right, with clay.
With some clay, sure.
Right. And then what they do is they put a gravel shell around it. So they put a lot of gravel around this big clay core. And so the dam down here is roughly 175 feet tall. And in the middle of that dam is this big, big wedge of clay. You know, it's probably in the neighborhood of, 500,000 yards of clay, something like that. I haven't seen the exact capacity, but then it's surrounded by a whole bunch of gravel that's packed down. And so this engineer who specializes in clay core dams, had sent a letter when he found out they were going to try to breach this dam. He became very concerned and alarmed, because what happens is the clay, you pack it down when it's dry, you maintain a certain low moisture content, and then you pack it down with equipment, and then you put a big shield of gravel around it to put pressure on all sides of the clay. And then when the clay gets wet, it becomes semi-plastic, and it becomes almost a liquid. It can vary between a plastic, you know, kind of like soft goo, soft mud.
But still, ultimately, it can seal, right? It ends up sealing the dam.
Yeah, right. Because of the small pore size, it seals and it stops the water. Well, what this engineer did is he became very alarmed when he heard they were going to try to breach this. Because what happens is when you cut through the envelope of gravel that encapsulates it, it can just suddenly all ooze out, and you know, spectacularly so. Not like, you know, not very, yeah. And
so, in other words, are you trying to tell me that this clay seal with thousands of yards of clay in it, of cubic yards of clay in this, is essentially a big Tide Pod of sort of thing, in which is a core of goo
that's exactly right, Bill. And if anybody that wants to read now, this engineer Stephen Koshy was very kind when he wrote his technical letter to the various people. He sent it everywhere. It went to the Department of Interior. It went to at that time he wrote this in 2012 when he heard the first go around they were going to try to do this. He sent it to everybody at the Siskiyou County Board of Supervisors. He sent it to just a whole list of people, and warning them that, you know, you breach this dam, it will fail catastrophically, because the only way you can do it is you have to let the clay core dry out. And he talks about that. He says it dries out at the rate of a couple of inches per year. Now, from what I can tell from the drawing and what I've read, you know, the base of this dam is somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 feet deep. And I'm not talking about the width of the river. I'm talking about up and down the river, around 150 feet deep. And then it's 175 feet tall. So you figure out how long, if it dries out at a couple of inches per year, how long is it going to take to reduce the moisture content?
Oh, my gosh. If you're talking a couple of inches per year and you're talking 100 and something feet, you're looking at dozens, if not hundreds of years before it is truly dried out and you try to remove it,
certainly,
right?
Yeah, certainly decades, because you have to bring the moisture, according to him, you have to bring the moisture content down to a level that before it became permeated with water. When the dam got filled up, this clay gets permeated with water and you get this this pressure that builds up in the clay, hydrostatic pressure.
And if you start cutting into it, it kind of bursts like a pimple. Is that kind of like a like an infected pimple?
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a gross example.
But I know, but a lot of stuff up there has been a gross example, you know, the way things have been doing, you know?
Yeah, millions of native dead fish. You know, Mark Branson says, we didn't kill any native fish. Oh, well, let me see now, Mr. Branson. The sediment only kills non-native fish, but not native fish. Interesting. We should go to the fisheries biologist with that one. That's an interesting thesis.
I'll bet.
So anyway, so this is a serious problem, Bill, because this engineer says it will fail catastrophically in a way that will just make, I mean, this is, we're talking probably in the neighborhood of maybe, I don't know, 100,000, 200,000 yards of clay mud and gravel that would come suddenly bursting down the river. And he also says it will collapse on the current tunnel. Now, they got a tunnel under Iron Gate that they're using to, you know, conduct the river. The river's
The river's flowing through the tunnel right now. They bored at the bottom, right?
Well, they didn't bore it. This has a regular dam control tunnel.
Okay,
you know, so you, with a big hydraulic gate. It's not. It was a lot. This is a lot different than what happened up there at Kopco 1. Kopco 1 had a diversion tunnel with an iron plug. It was done back in the early 1900s. It didn't work well. It didn't open. That was the problem. So they had to, because they were going to try to open this iron tunnel up at Kopco 1. It didn't open, and so they had to go ahead and do all that boring and put in a big pipe at the base of the dam and all that crap. This is different. This is a newer dam. This is 60 years old. So it actually has a diversion tunnel with a big hydraulic gate, and they can open and close or control volume with that gate. But what's going to happen, according to this engineer, if, you know, on top of the catastrophic collapse, if they try to, you know, notch this thing, it'll release all this clay. It will collapse down and it will plug both sides of that tunnel. And then the lake will fill up again and it'll start overflowing because there's no spillway then. You have a collapsed dam. All this crap goes down the river, covers people's properties and homes, and there will probably be loss of life because if it fails, it'll fail catastrophically. It'll just all of a sudden go boom, and it'll just come tumbling down. And the clay and gravel will go down the river, and then the river will be flowing over the top of this big mess. Because the diversion tunnel will be plugged on both sides.
And so it'll be washing the contents of the dam pimple, so to speak, since that's such an interesting way to envision it, right? It'll wash the contents all the way down the river then and just coat the banks and coat people's property, right?
Initially, there will be like a Lahore. It will be this massive combination of mud and gravel mixed with some water will come down. And it will come up on the banks. Considering the volume of that dam, it would probably come up in the banks 10, 20 feet on both sides for probably a mile or so. And you know, I haven't done the volumetric calculations, but there's a lot of volume there, and it will probably cover, it will cover homes, and there'll probably be lots of life. And then the remaining mess that's still sitting there, you know, that didn't, you know, squeeze down river, that will be washed over by the river because the tunnel will be plugged. And he says this in his paper. He says that tunnel will be plugged, and then you'll have additional problems because once that river starts coming over the top of it, there's no way to control that erosion. I mean, it you know, you can't deal with the dam anymore at that point. There is no diversion. There's no way to conduit the water around that giant mess. And so here's the thing, Bill. When I saw the letter from FERC that went to QRC, Mark Bransom, and a bunch of people, the California DEQ and somebody at the water board down in California, saying that Kiewit has pulled out of the Iron Gate Dam drilling project.
Now, Kiewit is one of the world's biggest construction companies, isn't it, from what I recall?
Yeah, they're really, yeah, I think they have projects all over the world, not just in the United States.
Now, do they pull out because, now, do we know for a fact, did Kiewit pull out because of potential liability?
Well, see, here's the thing. KRRC, you know, you got these, you know, I think it's a conniving bunch of fake people that are just smash and grab here on our river. They made everybody sign a non-disclosure agreement. This is a public project. We have a right of transparency. Mm-hmm. But KRRC, we're funding it. All these taxpayers on this, listening to your show in Oregon and California, we're paying for this mess. And there should be a level of transparency so we have a right to know. It's our money. But you know what? KRRC made all these contractors sign non-disclosure agreements, and they won't tell us. They can't tell us, or they'll break their agreement why they left. Now we know they left. Now here we just have to look at follow the money. Okay, it's Occam's razor time. You know, why would a company that specializes in construction and deconstruction of things walk away from millions of dollars?
Does make you wonder.
That's the question.
Okay.
Yeah, it's to me, the only thing I can, you know, I mean, one of the major reasons could be liability. Maybe their insurance company looked at this and they go, or maybe they were up there drilling little holes and out comes the oozing clay and they go, uh-oh, and we better get the hell out of here.
All right, so Bill, let me just ask, because they were drilling around there. There were drillings being conducted. What is the DPP referenced in your Siskiyou.News story? What is DPP?
That's what they referenced, and I didn't have a chance to look that up, but it's some sort of a, probably some reporting thing they got to provide. Or a commentary about what they're going to do. Now, there was a letter before this, I do know this, where the FERC and these people were asking KRRC to provide, you know, what's happening here, because they're trying to speed up the removal of the dam. And so they provided some new information, and these guys were all reviewing it, and they were reviewing that information that KRRC provided, but then Kiewit walked away. So they said, well, it's irrelevant now because they're gone. And you don't have a company on the dam anymore. So
does this mean, though, that the memo that I'm looking at here from FERC, that the dam removal at Iron Gate stops right now? Is that what's happening?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's their concluding statement. They said, at this point, we cannot allow you to move forward.
And this is about the potential, then, of the big pimple, the big clay pimple, that could burst and flood and just, you know, hundreds of thousands of cubic yards of clay ooze down the river, right? If they try to take this out,
I think that, well, according to this engineer Stephen Koshy, who's a specialist in earth and dams, he said it's not probable, it's certain.
That's
his language.
Okay, all right. Well,
this engineer.
Yeah,
he's not saying probable. He says it's absolutely certain that that's what will happen if they try to notch it. And so, you know, that's a big problem here. If they try to drill down into it, if they remove the shell, this gravel shell that encases the clay, this stuff will come piling out.
Oh, so even drilling into it would be potentially dangerous then.
Probably, yeah, and I'm not an engineer, but yeah, if you start removing the shell that encases this, you know, it's like a balloon around a mass of air under pressure. You know, if you remove part of the balloon in any spot, all the air comes out. My interpretation of what he said is that you start removing the gravel and uncovering the clay in any way, this stuff's going to come out because the gravel holds it there. It holds it in place. And because it's liquid. It's liquefied. The clay is liquefied. It's like a very soft plastic or something, and I guess it'll just come oozing out according to the engineer. So, and once it starts doing that, you can't stop it because it's like a dam that's breaching with water. It'll be slower, but once it takes off and you get a big gape in the shell, the gravel shell that holds it, it'll speed up and it'll fail catastrophically.
So, I would imagine the clay blob, a clay blob going down there would certainly not be conducive to fish habitat and passage.
Well, yeah, he says that too. He says, you know, on a lesser level of alarm, you know, this is counterproductive for salmon, recovery to have the blob monster go down the river.
Wow. Now, was this unknown in this whole lead up to this project, or were they talking about this? You may have mentioned that earlier in our talk, Captain Bill. Was this clay blob known about before?
Yeah, I mean, back in 2012, this engineer, Stephen Koshy, sent this memo, and it was very detailed. I mean, he spent a lot of time, and he sent it to everybody he could figure out to send it to, including Dr. Hauser, who was the senior science integrity officer at the Department of Interior.
He was the one that got kicked out because he wasn't sure that this dam removal was doing what all the claims were that the feds were doing, right?
Exactly. And, mm-hmm. and Dr. Hauser, who is I think he's a hydrologist, if I remember his credentials right, he looked at Stephen Koshy's work, and he cited it specifically in his reasons why removing the dams is not a good idea. He cited that specifically in his list of rebuttals to Lynch.
So we can't say that there has been no warning about the potential for real problems here on the Klamath Dam. All right. Now we're starting to see this. What happens now that FERC has said, hey, we're not doing any more action on removing this dam right now? What do you believe happens next? I know we could be engaging in some conjecture at the moment, but do we know?
Right. Well, if we just follow the money again, if it is, in fact, the insurance company, you know, Kiewit had some sort of an issue. It scared them. They reported it to their supervisors, the guys on the field, you know, boots on the ground here.
Well, yeah, because, you know, nobody wants to be the construction company that ends up drilling in and hacking into the blob and letting the blob. Nobody wants that kind of publicity, right? They don't want that.
No, if you release the blob monster, you're not going to have a good reputation. Yeah, and especially when people die or their homes are covered up with mud, clay mud. But the thing is I would guess that something happened. It got reported up the chain. They advised their insurance company because under the policy, they probably have to advise them of any adverse impact or discoveries. And the insurance company says, all right, we're not going to cover it anymore. You're out of there. That would be my guess. Okay, mm-hmm. that it's about the money and the insurance. The insurance won't underwrite it. So now I think, and assuming that theory holds water, KRC is going to have to go find somebody else. But insurance underwriters talk to each other, and the word will be out in the insurance community pretty quick that, hey, you know, there's a blob monster under that ground.
Yeah, the clay blob monster. You want no part of trying to underwrite that, right? That sort of thing.
Right.
You don't want to put your stockholders or shareholders at risk on this.
Yeah, Koshy talks about what happened, too. He says if they mess with this thing and this clay core comes squirting out all over, they're going to end up, he said, hastily having to construct some heavy cables overhead and try to bucket that stuff out of there while the river's flowing over the top of it, you know, a bucket at a time. He says it's going to be very expensive. And again, he says it's not going to be good for the salmon having all this stuff go down the river on top of what they've already released. I mean, this whole thing has been a rolling train wreck, you know, and it's because they tried to do it cheap and dirty. Instead of doing what in the first CDM Smith studies that came up in 2011, I think it was February, they did a study. They says you need to dredge this sediment out.
Yeah, that was what's said right from the beginning, but that was too expensive to do it. Yep, I understand it's too expensive to do it, but there's a reason why the plan originally was to dredge it all out. Because of these kind of dangers, these sort of risks.
It's sort of I know we're talking millions of dollars, but it's penny wise and pound foolish. The bottom line is it was expensive, but the alternative of polluting the river and having a big sediment mess that we've got now and all the native species wiped out, what's the loss there? You know, I mean, you have to look at, you know, I would tell Mark Bransom, the short-term losses exceed the long-term gains, Mark. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing just this rolling train wreck, and it only seems to be getting worse. And the other thing is, too, is they're going to leave the sediment there. I can see the chess moves on the board here. They're leaving three-quarters of the sediment, the polluted sediment up here. It's all clay. It's 80% clay. according to Gethardt Engineering Consulting from Seattle, this is 78% clay, fine clay. And so they're leaving three-quarters of it sitting here in the bottom of a canyon. It will be scoured in the next flood, and it will go down the river and kill the river again. You know, so, and there is no way any little grass plantings and little bushes are going to stop it. You know, these kind of floods move boulders and homes and trees down rivers. So, yeah. You know, it's just ludicrous. This whole thing is, it's cheap, and it's designed to be a big financial gain for somebody. And doing it cheap and dirty like this leads to nothing but disaster for taxpayers, because we're footing the bill.
We're ultimately on the hook then, because this is what right. The governors did, because this was the politically favored situation, predetermined outcome. The dams are coming out. Fish be damned, even though we're going to claim that the fish is what we're doing this for. Okay. So, Bill, thank you for the journalism on this one. Siskiyou.news is where this is. And the title of this article, Siskiyou.news, Trouble in Dam Removal Paradise. Kiewit has pulled out of the Klamath River Dam Project. And so things there at the Iron Gate, at least, are on hold right now. This is only affecting Iron Gate, right? We just want to make sure that we're clear on this.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. They pulled out of the drilling project at Iron Gate, and something's wrong. They won't tell us because they had to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's criminal right there. We all have a right. This is our.
Yeah. These are taxpayer dollars going into this, and ratepayer dollars. There should be no such thing as a non-disclosure with what's going on out there, and that's on public
right.
land. Yeah, Captain Bill.
Public project.
All right. Thank you so much for the analysis on this, and stay in touch. But boy, this is. once again, another smack my head kind of moment, right? That's really what we're seeing here at the Klamath.
That's right.
All right.
Well, appreciate it, Bill. Thank you for having me.
All right. Appreciate you being on. It's 7:36. You're on KMED.
When you hire a contractor, the last worry you should have is, are they capable enough to handle the job? A well drilling contractor is no different, especially with tough drilling conditions Southern Oregon can encompass. Clouser Drilling invests in capable machinery, tooling, and personnel equipped to handle these conditions. They operate four modern rotary drill rigs with capabilities from air rotary, mud rotary, and drill and drive casing advancement systems. Combine this with over 50 years and thousands of wells drilled, and worry no more. Contact Clouser Drilling or visit Clouser Drilling.
This is Insurance Agent A.
Hey.
He sells for one company only.
It's the absolute best.
To my right, an exemplary insurance agent, an independent, which means...
I can help you research multiple insurance plans, giving you a much better look at who actually has the better coverage.
Well, that's not fair.
That's not what our customers say.
Well, I can't compete with that.
Home, auto, health, life. Sky Park Insurance is your local independent agency that shops for the best coverage for less. Steve makes insurance easy.
A message from Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. Thank you so much for your continued support over the years. We are very grateful. With your loyal support, we have been able to give back to our community in 2023, providing new roofing shelter to very deserving individuals. In 2024, we have been blessed with giving back to the beloved Cats organization on Ross Lane here in Medford. Stop by, adopt, or donate anytime. Stay tuned to hear how you can enter to win our next roof giveaway throughout the year.
With so many working and doing business from home, it's good to know there's a community business center to help. A Street Print and Parcel is a one-stop shop for everything from large format printing and scanning to blueprints, architectural plans, and shipping. Their Studio 10 expansion offers passport photos, photo mounting, fine art scanning, art reproductions, signs and banners, negative and slide scanning, canvas prints, and so much more. Located in Ashland on A Street across from Ashland Hardware. Their motto, we create it, print it, pack it, and ship it. A Street Print and Parcel and Studio 10.
Voting is in progress for Bicoastal Media's Best of Southern Oregon contest presented by Dusty's Transmissions. Go to bestofsouthernoregon.com and vote on over 1,000 businesses that were nominated in nearly 200 categories. You're able to vote for all of your favorites once per day. So visit bestofsouthernoregon.com and help the best suppliers of goods and services win the gold and silver medals by voting every day through Wednesday, April 24th at 5 p.m. Good luck to all those nominated from Dusty's Transmissions and Bicoastal Media.
Welcome back to the Bill Meyer Show, 106.3 KMET, 99.3 KCMD.
All right, 7:38, ran a little long with Captain Bill. Kind of a fascinating situation. You know, you think back all this talk on the Klamath and, 10, 15, 20 years ago when I first started doing talk radio. Actually, it's about 24 years, 23 years now. And we were talking about what a bad idea the dam removal was then. It's okay. We're going to keep going forward. Predetermined outcome. And then 5 years go by, predetermined outcome, we're moving forward. Oh, we're going to do this. No, we got to stop this. And so everybody tries to get FERC to stop it. And, oh, we got to stop this. We got to stop this. Now they finally stopped it, at least at Iron Gate, because of the Tide Pod pimple, the clay pimple that would come and burst in. Just amazing. It is just amazing. And I can't help but think that there's a movie loop that always rolls in my head. It was the late Sean Connery when he was playing an Indiana Jones father in one of those Raiders of the Lost Ark kind of movies. And I remember him saying, "I'm surrounded by morons." The crisis of competency is one of the biggest ones. It's one of the biggest challenges. Can we survive our elites with their predetermined outcome? That I don't know. But after news, we're going to talk about some local politics here. Josephine County Commission, a big race going on there. Mark Jones reached out and he wanted to come on. We'll talk about that and some of the issues involved in. A lot of intractable problems there that we need to look at, too.
One of each, Forte VIN 770-783, MSRP 21645, 3502, Sol VIN 235213, MSRP 22210, 3502, 10K miles per year, zero security deposit, all incentives and discounts to dealer, plus tax, title, license, 150 registration processing fee. Trading in a vehicle will not eliminate your debt. Negative equity applied to new loan balance ends 4/30/24.
Making payments on a car you don't want to drive anymore? You need Kia Medford's Payment Wipeout. We're wiping out all the payments you have left on your old car so you can drive a new Kia, like a new 2024 Kia Forte LXS or a new 2024 Kia Soul LX. Just $149 a month lease, both for 24 months. Plus, once we make a deal at Kia Medford, we'll pay off your trade no matter how much you owe. Need credit? Go to KiaMedford.com to get pre-approved in less than 30 seconds with no effect on your credit score. Get into a new Kia, like Fortes or Souls. Your choice, just $149 a month during the payment wipeout at Kia Medford. Click KiaMedford.com.
KMED, KCMD News, sponsored by Millette Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MilletteConstruction.com.
Good morning, I'm Marcus Villa with your NBC5 Morning News Update. The Oregon State Fire Marshal is awarding $6 million in grants to 191 fire agencies across the state in an effort to boost district staffing. According to John Hendricks, public affairs specialist for the Oregon State Fire Marshal, this grant funding is from the Wildfire Season Staffing Grant Program. Each fire agency is eligible for up to $35,000 depending on its needs. The Jackson County Sheriff's Office and community partners are teaming up to clean graffiti and trash in White City. This cleanup effort is part of White Mountain Middle School's Graffiti Removal Achieving Community Empowerment Project. The group plans these cleanup efforts to maintain the cleanliness of the White City community. Another cleanup event is planned for April 24th. The Pear Blossom Run is kicking off downtown Medford early this Saturday morning. Chuck Whiteley, the race director for the Pear Blossom Run, says registration for the run is above pre-pandemic levels. Brad Russell, executive director of the Rogue Valley Family YMCA, says there are currently around 1,000 people registered for just the 5K run alone. Whiteley and Russell say this event is a great way to get in the fun of the Pear Blossom Festival this weekend as well. For local news anytime, you can head to our website, KBI5.com, or to our Facebook page. And that's a look at your morning headlines. For NBC5 News, I'm Marcus Villa. Happy Thursday.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
Hi, it's Jason at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros. Now through April, purchase one of three styles of General G-Max High or Ultra High performance tires for your modern muscle car, sports car, or sporty coupe or sedan and get a Visa reward card in the mail. Or purchase four Ultimax tires for your passenger car or crossover and get $60 Visa reward card. The Ultimax is an all-season touring tire built for long-lasting, year-round use. Save on General Tires for any of your cars you drive at Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros.
If you want to enjoy everything an active and vibrant senior community has to offer, the Springs at Anna Maria Medford is the right lifestyle option for you. Life is easier living among friends and neighbors in stylish private apartments with large balconies, all while fully supported by our team of dedicated caregivers and service professionals. The Springs at Anna Maria is located in a quiet neighborhood close to Rogue Regional Hospital. Call to schedule a tour of the independent and assisted living community, 541-774-1822.
At Pressure Point Roofing, our dedicated team of repair and maintenance professionals work on hundreds of roofs a year. We can see where problems can start on your home or commercial property. We have the years of experience and commitment to quality that you need to protect your home or business. Having an annual inspection can prevent you from suffering through the damage, stress, and costs of an interior repair. Just like your car's oil change, preventative work can save you money and headaches. To schedule a repair and inspection, or to learn more how a maintenance program can help you, visit PressurePointRoofing.com.
If you're remodeling your house, start with the foundation. Millett Construction offers a no-pressure, thorough inspection of your home's foundation and a no-obligation estimate if your house needs work. The foundation is most important because all of the repairs and upgrades you're planning, from the floors, windows, doors, cabinets, even the roof, can be affected if your foundation is unstable. Be sure you're on solid ground. Millett Construction will level your house and correct the shifting soil problem. Visit MillettConstruction.com.
Hi, I'm Randy with Diner 62, and I'm on KMED and KCMD.
In Josephine County, the elect there, county commissioners, is a kind of a jungle primary. And if you end up getting everybody in there, and if you have one person that ends up making it out, one vote more than 50% of the primary, then you end up being the next commissioner, which is kind of interesting here. And Mark Jones, one of them, and Mark Jones is running for Josephine County Commission District. Now, it's not district. They don't have districts, but boy, they're trying to get districts, I guess. But position right. Two.
Right? Position two, correct.
All right. Now, former firefighter, tell us a little bit about yourself here.
So, when I was 21, my best friend got me involved in the fire service. He had been involved since right out of high school.
Just kind of moved close
started,
to the mic there.
Oh, sorry.
Okay? There
we
go.
So that started my career in the fire service back in 1991. I started for a local department called Valley Fire Service back in the day, which then became Rural Metro Fire. In 1999, that career took me to Phoenix, Arizona, where I worked in the city of Scottsdale until 2005, when the city of Scottsdale took over the fire service from Rural Metro. Rural Metro actually originated in the city of Scottsdale by a guy named Lou Wiseman, who started a private fire service for an area that wasn't protected by a municipal department. So,
have you been involved in fire protection in Joe County?
Yes. Yeah. So since I've been back, so I back up a little bit. I retired from the city of Scottsdale Fire Department in 2018 and decided to move home to Josephine County. My family moved here back in 1971, and this has always been my home.
This is home. You graduated from Hidden Valley.
I did.
Right?
Yep. Graduated Hidden Valley. So since I've been back, I've been involved in, trying to provide quality fire service for the citizens of Josephine County. So there's about 350 square miles of Josephine County that are considered underserved because there is no fire district.
What role do you think that Senate Bill 762, I imagine you kept an eye on that, the fire map thing. What do you believe? Now, see, if you become a county commissioner, you're going to be involved in a lot of firefighting and fire issues here. What is your thought about, did they do the right thing with their fire map? Or?
No, the fire map, I don't believe it utilized the correct data points. I think they focused on one data point, and they should have probably utilized at least three to do a true comparison of what the hazard really is out there.
All right. Well, there are certainly a lot of hazards and a lot of fights in Josephine County coming here. And the first one I have to ask, given that you're running to be on the county commission, what is your opinion of 17-116? Is this something which is a good idea that you would like to see happen? Why? Why not? What is your overall take? Because it kind of gives people an idea on what your thoughts are on county government, how it should be structured.
Right. So if you look at running the county like a corporation, then the concept of a county manager and the five commissioners would fall into that. So you have a corporation where you have a CEO that then is governed by the board of directors, right? So that's how corporations are run and managed. So that aspect, maybe it'd be a good thing to actually run Josephine County like a business. Other parts of that I'm still looking into because there was some opposition and they brought up some points. And so there's some state statutes that are involved in that on whether or not those five positions actually have to be paid a comparable rate. So still looking into that one, because if that's the case, then Josephine County can't afford to do that, because that would cost way too much to implement the five commissioner thing if they have to be paid a comparable salary to other commissioners. So,
What are your thoughts about, because if they end up, if the voters pass for this, and in my opinion, I don't think it's a good deal for Josephine County. In fact, I even put an argument in the voters pamphlet, and I'm not even a resident, but I feel for you, you know, what right, you're right, what you're having to put right up there, that this would be a bad situation. And it's not even necessarily just the cost. I'm just looking at the responsiveness of this, and I also look at who is asking. Now, you are a nonpartisan guy. This is a nonpartisan race. You're not associated with any particular party.
No, I'm a registered non-affiliated.
Yeah, but you are. But you consider yourself a pretty good conservative, I guess,
I am,
right?
Yeah, I've been conservative my whole life. The only reason I removed my Republican label was because the right and the left have grown so far apart, and nobody works together anymore, and we suffer by not being able to work together on the important issues like safety, security, and the prosperity of our county.
Yeah. I don't know if there's much difference and much argument about safety and security, but there certainly are some arguments about the worldview, and mostly what has been coming out with this charter change, 17-116 proposed, has been coming from mostly Democrats, because Josephine County has had a preponderance of conservatives.
Right. So actually, that group, so I started following the Charter Review Committee a couple, because it, I don't know, 2 years that they spent working on that. And that was, you know, the what came out of that review committee was then picked up by some other people.
Yeah, this is a splinter group that pushed this.
Right, correct. I sat in with them in the beginning when they were starting to form that, just to kind of, you know, see who was there. And it actually truly was a nonpartisan group. There were some Republicans, there were some non-affiliates, and there were Democrats in it. I unfortunately didn't have the time to be involved with them because I had a bunch of other things going on. So I didn't really have any input. I was only there for two of their meetings, and then they took off and did their thing. So, but it was, in the beginning, when I was sitting in on them, it was truly a nonpartisan group.
Do you think in a you know, smaller county, smaller budget like Josephine County, that it has served to all of a sudden go from three, which has served for more than 100 years,
right,
of course, and then all of a sudden the skies open and the heavens smile upon us because we have five in districts?
No. So, again, if that statute's there that states that they indeed do have to be paid the full cost, then it's not beneficial for us to do that. As five part-time commissioners, it would pencil out.
Did you sign the petition for that charter?
I actually signed both of them.
You
because
did.
I wanted them both to go to the public to get the true feel. And I think the other one didn't make it because it was partisan.
Okay. Let's talk about what you would do as a county commissioner. What do you see as the major bones of contention, and what could you do to affect some change on that?
Well, obviously, economic growth is a key thing that we need. You know, you talked, you mentioned once earlier about how do you pay for it? So real quick, I just give a quick summary of what last year's 2023-2024 presented. The proposed budget was $186,350,500. Now, that was an 8% decrease over the prior year. However, the actual budget ended up this year coming in lower than that.
Yeah,
but this is what was proposed.
As contrasted with Medford or Jackson County as an example, they're talking about a $640 million.
Right.
So that tells you the difference in economic activity.
Yeah.
It's not just commensurate with population here.
Right.
And how much does what you actually get to control, though, is quite a bit smaller than that, the actual
Correct.
General funds budget. A lot of that is pass-through money and grants, right?
Correct. Yeah, that's what I was going to give the breakdown here real quick of what that looks like. So grants represent about 67%. Fees and charges for services represent about 16%. And then the property taxes, including local levies, represents about 15%. So if you look at the general fund, for 23-24 was $5.2 million. That's the 58 cents per thousand that the county collects for the county general fund.
That's what you would actually control as a county commissioner.
Correct.
You know, and that's not a huge amount of money in the grand scheme of things.
It's so not.
What would you like to see done then when you talk about increasing economic activity?
Right. So there are some other funds that do come into that. And there's the old O&C funds and the SRS, which if you're familiar with that, is dwindling and going away. So in just for that, 23-24, it was only $4 million. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's added into the general fund. Some of that, actually, the SRS goes to public works. So that helps with the roads and taking care of that. So those funds are there. PILT is the one that really bothers me. So if you're familiar with that, it's payment in lieu of taxes,
right? This is essentially the federal rent.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So roughly 64% of Josephine County is federal or BLM land, right? Property that's owned by private citizens accounts for roughly 30%. That 30% in the general fund, because it's 58 cents per thousand for the taxes, creates $5.2 million. The 64% that the federal government owns, they gave us a whole $800,000 for their payment in lieu of taxes.
Hmm. So they get off pretty cheap.
Pretty darn cheap. Mm-hmm. So somehow we need to figure out how to hold them accountable for paying more for the land that they hold here, or give us that land so that we can then in turn sell it to private parties to build on. We have a housing shortage. We need land. We need to change Senate Bill 100 because that's a 50-year-old bill that keeps us from developing out in the rural areas. You know, back in the day when it was created, sure, it was going to protect our agriculture and it was going to protect our forest lands and things like that. But what happened is now we're in a much different situation. We need housing. So they've limited what we could do out in the rural areas.
Yeah, everything has to be within the urban growth boundary.
Right. Well, all right. So we can develop, if we can change Senate Bill 100 to allow, like the area that I grew up out in, Murphy, we were on a quarter-acre lot. Back in the day, they had little communities like that out in the rural residential areas. So changing Senate Bill 100 would allow us to do things like that, create more little smaller properties in these pockets like Murphy, Williams, Merlin, Wilderville.
So you're not a fan of everything just being dumped into the city of Grants Pass Urban Growth Boundary?
Okay. No.
All right.
And if you
think you can get some political juice in Salem to maybe make this happen?
Well, you know, if all the rural counties come together, we're a lot stronger if we're all on the same page. And I think if all the rural counties could join together in some sort of, let's say, rural county caucus or something, and they could join together and have a bigger say in what goes on in our rural counties.
You're probably looking at some serious budgetary issues just because of inflation and PERS obligations that you're going to need. Cost of insurance, I would imagine, is going to do this. Are there alternative funding methods? City of Grants Pass, of course, is throwing everything that they have at the wall and seeing what the voters would put up with. Is it time for that kind of a conversation with Josephine County rural residents?
No, I don't think we need to raise taxes. I think what we need to do is raise the amount of properties paying taxes. And again, that goes back to what I was just saying. The development of properties who would then be paying into our tax base.
ElectMarkJones.com is the website. Mark, if someone is going to hit you up in an elevator, I don't know if there were any elevators in Grants Pass or not, but give me your elevator pitch. I always let a candidate give their take on it. You know, someone says, Mark, what you running for? It's kind of a crazy time. Why do you want to jump into this?
Well, honestly, I didn't actually really prepared my elevator speech for today. I should have. But I'm running for Josephine County Commissioner because I am tired of electing individuals who prioritize their own self-interests over the interests and needs of our county.
That's an interesting statement. How have commissioners been prioritizing, in your view?
Loaded question.
Yeah, it's kind of a loaded question.
It is a loaded question.
You know, and so it's a big claim. So
yeah, what you got? It was a general, and over the years we have elected individuals who have put things above the county, personal, whether it be personal or whatever, or just their views, being the views of the majority of our county.
Can you give me an example?
Well, we could go back to the fire district stuff if you wanted to.
Okay, go ahead.
So there were some individuals who ran for fire board positions when the fire board, or when the fire district was put on the ballot. They ran for fire board positions so that they could use it as a platform to push against the fire district. And there are reasons, I believe, that they were against that fire district that were not reasons that would have benefited the county.
Okay. And so they ran for fire board, but they ran for fire board wanting to kill the fire district.
Correct.
Interesting. All right. Not going to name names?
No.
Okay. Mark, we'll name your name. We appreciate you coming in. And Mark Jones, let's see, we get that, electmarkjones.com. is where you can find out more about his deal. And we'll see what happens in this primary election. Okay? Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you.